This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh, live from the EVCO Development Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Dawson Iserlo with you. James Mesh is in the producer's chair. Raymond Parch the Third's to my left. How are we all doing today?
We are doing tremendous. I am locked in, been a very productive morning, even squeezed in a little grocery shopping before I got on the air. So
how about that?
Huh?
That's not every day.
Multitasking today, watch out.
And you're able to make fun of Miguez for a little bit too.
Oh, I always find time. I've already done that twice this morning.
Speaking of Miguez, he came in and hung up a Let's Go Pels flag in here, but he didn't center it, so that's really bothering
me. And it's not at a camera angle.
Nope.
You know, I'm going to take care of that right now. Won't you go and lead us off? I'm going to take care of that right
he's
now.
He's going to fix the flag.
I'm going to fix the flag. I'm going to fix the wrong.
I guess we're going rally towel here.
I'm going to fix the wrong.
Okay, so while he does that, I can tell you about the show we have lined up for you. It's going to be a lot of fun. We talked to him a while back, and we're going to catch back up with him. Corey Sanoa, who has come up with some concepts for a UL mascot. He's gotten a lot of traction with it on social media. We've been kind of following it along throughout the process here, and he hasn't stopped working on it. So we're going to catch up with him in the second hour, and we'll also catch up with Jeff Palermo, our guy from Tiger Rag Radio by LSU. So both guests will be in hour number two. Hour number one, though, a lot of catching up to do on the NBA playoffs last night, as well as some big-time matchups that we got the preview as well. Going to be a fun hour number one. If you want to join us on the Mike's Marine Hotline, it'll be open during that first hour, 337-706-0111. But all things considered, should be a fun Tuesday. It's a big-time week.
It's a big-time Tuesday. Fixed it. Fixed it.
I'm glad. It looks
much better.
There it
is. He's right. See, now it's hanging up behind us. It's right behind Messi, the greatest of all time, right?
Lionel Messi, that
there
is.
We go. Yep. There we go. Let's go, Pels. It's right behind my big melon head. If I just scoot over this way, it makes it even better. Hold on. I'm going to get
you're
a little too close to you,
Dawson.
You're
going the wrong way.
I'm going the wrong way?
Yeah, go to your left. There you go. Yeah. And he's out of frame.
All right. So now we got that settled. Let's go, Pels is clearly the motto this week and for the next couple of weeks.
Shenanigans.
We'll see what they can do. Man. Weird schedule, too.
We'll see if we can get to a couple weeks.
It just feels there should be a Pels game tonight. The double off days, I get they do it for TV. They want to spread this thing out. But, I mean, like, I was ready for another Pels game tonight here, but we don't have one.
I was going to say, they always do that for the first round. But then once you get into the second round into the conference finals, usually you don't have to worry about that much.
The other thing about it, though, is just the unevenness, I guess, of the off days when you have the win. So now you get two off days in between game one and two off days in between game two and three. But then you play game four after just one off day. I don't know. It is what it is. As I've said before, the NBA doesn't call me to ask me about these things. But they'll be playing tomorrow night. So we have another day to kind of digest what happened in game one.
Correct.
And think about what's going to happen in game two. I'll tell you what, 7.5-point favorites are the Thunder in game two. That's a little higher than I would have thought. But Vegas clearly thinks the Thunder are going to play better, just like we kind of suggested. We don't think the Thunder will struggle as much as they did in game one.
I would agree. I would agree with that. I don't like it. The scheduling is, look, it is what it is. It's been that way for a while. The NBA drags out their postseason when they could easily have games sooner. They do this because of the television contract. They've been doing this for years. This is just how it is. We do have a tremendous show lined up for you today. We got plenty to get to involving, I don't know, how about LSU? How about McNeese? How about UL? How about the Saints? How about the draft? How about the Pellies? How about James Mesh's hair today? Looking a little mid, bud. I expected better from you.
Wow.
Wow.
I expected better. I was ready, unbeknownst to you, was ready to proclaim to you to have the best head of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas.
What a coincidence that it comes up on this day.
But now, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to earn my trust back.
So what's the issue?
It just looks like you put no effort into it.
I don't think he ever puts any effort into it.
I was going to say,
that's kind of the problem. But
it's just the natural look, as opposed to Miguez, who just spends 2 hours on
it. I think Miguez puts each individual piece of hair in place in the mornings.
I do. It's yeah. It's
that's why you're more productive.
All five
it doesn't
of
take
them
as much time of
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yes. I don't have to worry about my hair.
But with that being said, why don't we just get it going? Let's go ahead and give our specials today.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans, but They can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces. Order up. Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
All right, the Astros are going to Wrigley Field. They don't get to play in Wrigley too often. Now they'll get to play there more now that the interleague schedule is what it is. But, of course, for a long time you had that, you know. Now, there was a long stretch of time where they went to Wrigley often because they were in the National League. But since they've joined the American League, hasn't been as plentiful, but they'll be there for a three-game set. A little disappointing, you know, Wrigley, so many day games, and they've got the ordinances with the neighborhood rights, so they play a lot of Friday afternoon games. Only one day game in this three-game set. It'll be the finale, which we will have a bit of an abbreviated show, only by 10 minutes or so, on Thursday for that. But a couple of night games here today and tomorrow. J.P. France gets the ball. They shuffled things around once again once they had to put Christian Javier on the injured list, call back up Spencer Arrighetti. So they decide to let France go tonight instead of tomorrow, and then Arrighetti, the former Cajun, will pitch tomorrow. What a day for Cajuns athletics tomorrow it'll be. We'll have more on that later on. But they'll have France on the mound tonight, and they need a win. And I gave my goals for the series last week when they played the Braves, the defending, or the, you know, champions from a few years ago. Not defending. I've been messing that up a lot recently.
It's okay.
The Rangers. Maybe I'm putting the Rangers out of my mind is really what happens. So then everything else gets shuffled behind that.
It's right here.
It's on your quarter zip there.
There we go.
I gave my goals, and they were simple. It was have every starter throw at least four innings, don't give up more than four runs in one single inning in the series, and win at least one game. They did two of the three. They didn't win the one game, which is arguably the most important of all, right? So I decided to come up with some new goals for this series, and they are as follows. I'm not going to even go as far as the four-inning thing because you're throwing Arrighetti tomorrow, and it's been a little bit up and down. I don't know what Arrighetti's pitch count's going to be stretched out to. He's coming back up from AAA. He's been traveling a lot. So I don't have an inning requirement there. What I do want to see, though, is defensively, just don't give it away, right? And so I'll go with a walks category here. I want less than four walks or less than a walk per inning from my starting pitchers for the series. Let's make it more simple than that. For your starting pitchers, less than a walk. I'll throw hit by pitches in there as well. Free 90s, I like to call them. Let's have less than one per inning for our starters. That's goal number one. Goal number two. This is a tough one, especially for the Astros. Let's not blow a save, shall we? If we have a lead in the ninth inning, let's try and win that game. I know that's hard. Haven't done it much this year. But if they do have a lead and it happens to be in the ninth inning, that's when baseball games are decided. Let's try and keep it. So no blown saves. That's goal number two. And goal number three, I'm really going to get bold here. Let's win two out of the three. Let's go ahead and do two games because we didn't win the one against the Braves. So I would have just said win one again because you're on the road. Cubs are a pretty good team. I have eyes on the NL Central this year. No, we got to make up for the losses to the Braves. We got to win two of them. Win two out of three, less than a walk per inning from your starters, and don't blow a save. There you go. Houston Astros in Wrigley, three-game set. You can hear tonight's game on News Talk 985.
Lofty, lofty goals for our guy, D'Lo. But I appreciate it. I like it. You're trying to create a standard that the Astros apparently don't want to...
They don't want to follow it.
They don't want to follow it, but you're creating one, and hopefully they'll get their act together and listen to the son of Iceman. I like that so much I may not even want to do mine. Hold up. Nope, I do. My today's special is about the transfer portal. Hey, yeah. If you're a McNeese Cowboy fan, you are feeling it today, right? You're feeling good. You know why? Because Willie the Kid is at it again. The master of the portal. He's just wheeling and dealing, getting things done. Earlier this month, the first guy he got out of the portal was, of course, the Cairn Crow native, former state champion, all-state player, all-conference player for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, Joe Charles. Boom! Stunned the Raging Cajuns. Cajun Nation not happy. Vermilion and white? No, no. So he goes to Lake Chuck. Well, yesterday, Will Wade was a busy man. He got not one, but two guys out of the portal to come and play for the Meanese Cowboys. We broke one live on the air, and that, of course, was St. Louis University guard Sincere Parker. He's 6'3", junior guard, averaged 16 points per game, shot 42.6% from three-point range, even though he only played 20 minutes per game because he was coming back from injury. So he wasn't even necessarily healthy. The previous year, he appeared in all 33 games for the Billikens. Great name, by the way. Oh, great name. They play in the A-10. So, good basketball conference. This is a guy that's going to come to Lake Charles with 2 years of experience under his belt. And he began his career in the community college realm where he was a community college All-American, first teamer, by the way. So, 3 years of experience, two playing in a basketball league. He's going to come. Looks like he's probably going to take over that role that Wells had for them last year when they won a historic 30 games and made it to the NCAA tournament. But they weren't done. You know I struggle with names.
Let's hear it here. I had a little trouble with this one as well this morning.
I'm going to give my best here, okay?
I'm going to give you a pass no matter the pronunciation.
Well,
from you.
There is a level of at least ballpark that he's got to get to, right, James?
I mean it's a very vague ballpark.
Yeah.
Arizona State's Bryant Celebanke?
Celebanke? I don't quite think.
No?
I had more of a Celebang.
Celebang? Okay.
Because it's that G-U-E, you know, usually that kind of.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I got you.
I'm not 100 on that.
No,
I'm about 85.
Yeah, we'll need a pronunciation from a.
Yeah, I'm sure McNeese.
We'll
have that in the guide.
Yeah, we'll get that from Jim Gazzolo later
on Friday.
Obviously. But the big fella, that's what I'm going to refer to him as, from Arizona State, announced his transfer on social media late Monday night. I actually had to wake up Dawson. He was already sleeping on the group text to let him know that the news was breaking. He goes to bed early. Boom. Like, you know.
Well.
He just goes, listen, nightly news, 10 o'clock nightly news, my man falls asleep. He's done. It's a wrap.
But I will say, this week, I already kind of planned it out. Pelly's got that 8:30 tip. I got to use up a late night on those nights. So
you got to catch up
on the sleep when you can.
I got you. 6'8", 225-pound junior forward. He's been a little bit everywhere. This will be his fifth team in 5 years. So he's a bit of a world traveler, right? Hutchinson Community College, then Florida Southwestern Community College. Then he transferred to the D1 level, played for Tulsa. Shout out to Golden Hurricane, another great mascot name, by the way. And averaged 12 and 10, nearly 10 for them, so nearly a double-double. And then last year, he entered the portal, went and played for Bobby Hurley at ASU. Appeared in 28 games, only 4 starts, averaged 4-4. So not a huge, you know, stats aren't going to jump out at you, but he's 6'8", right? The wingspan. You can tell Will Wade is putting an emphasis on having guys on this team that have massive wingspans. So 3 guys in the portal so far, and I've been told by reliable sources that they're not done. A couple other big names could drop this week and make their way to Lake Charles. So a great day for the NCAA transfer portal if you were, in fact, a McNeese Cowboy. If you're a Louisiana Raging Cajun fan, you're not happy. Not happy at all. Kobe Julian, who seems like he's been there since James Mesh was in middle school, playing for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns.
There's a potential for that.
He announced on social media yesterday that he's going to play his final season at Arkansas State. My man has opted to leave the Cajuns after 6 years, and he's going to go to their rival, who also plays in the same division as they do. As you can imagine, Raging Cajun fans, not happy. They lost Joe Charles to their old Interstate 10 rival. Old school Cajun fans dislike McNeese more than new school fans do. So they did that, and now Kobe Julian is left. Now, credit to him. He says, look, you have to step out of your comfort zone to grow. Next chapter. I get it. This is the only program he's ever known. Right? He's coming off his best season for the Cajuns when he earned second team All-Sun Belt honors and was twice named the Sun Belt Player Conference Player of the Week. And he led the league in scoring with 17.3 points. But he also missed essentially 3 seasons of college to knee injuries. He lost his last year of high school. You know, he didn't even get to play in the playoffs that year at Madison Prep. So a guy that's got a lot of wear and tear and has been banged up. I know it hurts. You lost Joe Charles because he was a local kid. He gets developed into a conference player of the year, helps the team get to the tournament the prior year, and now he's off playing for Will Wade and McNeese. I know Kobe Julian. By the way, what hurts worse is that he's a legacy. His papa, by the way, was part of that Raging Cajuns 1977 Southland Conference Championship team. He played for the Cajuns in the 70s, right? And now he's gone, and he goes to another rival. I get it. I understand why you're frustrated. I understand why you're angry. I get it. I really do. But this is the world we live in. And Bob Marlin and his staff are going to have to make an adjustment on the fly to figure out how to deal with the NCAA transfer portal and get guys to come back in, because they lost two starters off of last year's team. That hurts.
I have a pronunciation for you. It's a little more exciting.
Thank you.
I went into the archives of the Arizona State pronunciation guides from previous years. It's Celebungay.
Celebungay.
A little fun there, huh?
Celebungay.
It's got a nice little ring to it.
Celebungay down low.
James Mesh, you're up.
Sorry. I'm a little extra today.
I was going to say, you are on a different level today. I'll be quick with my special. It's about the triple header.
It's about the New York Knicks coming for your Celtics, right?
No, I'm not scared.
Oh, not scared of the Knicks?
No. The three games that we had seen last night for the NBA playoffs, two of them were really good, including that 76ers-Knicks game before the Lakers-Nuggets. But I'll quickly get to the Magic and Cavs, because the Magic, they are just completely outmatched. Cleveland, they have not played their best games, but they've done well enough offensively to make sure that they're able to score enough points. Orlando, they just really struggle. I know that they played relatively good defense, and Cleveland hasn't had their best games, but the fact that they have such a young core, Jalen Suggs, Paolo Banchero, the Wagner brothers, they look good. The fact that they got to the 5-seed, that's a huge success. The fact that they've been able to progress as much as they did, they were kind of looking like, okay, maybe they can make some noise in the playoffs. Well, the fact that really no one outside of Joe Ingles on their team has playoff experience, you were just expecting this to be more of a gentleman's sweep. But the way that the Magic have played over these first two games, I'm expecting a sweep from Cleveland. Just get them out the way. Looking at the Knicks and 76ers, that was a really good game. The first two games that they've played, this has been a really tight, close series, and I've been excited to see both of them. The ending was really intriguing, because the TNT doubleheader, they were absolutely phenomenal. Philly was up 101-96 with 30 seconds to go. They toss it to Jalen Brunson in the left corner. He takes a sidestep, hits the three, makes it a two-point game. But then they were able to attack Tyrese Maxey. He ends up losing the ball. They get the ball back. Dante DiVincenzo takes the three to try and take the lead. He misses, but they get an offensive rebound, get the ball back. Dante takes the three from the top of the key, makes it 102-100 with about 14 seconds to go. Tyrese Maxey tries to take it down the court to get an easy layup because he's just so fast. And he and Joel Embiid combined for 69 points. They looked really good. The rest of the 76ers did not look too good. They didn't contribute too much from that game. But Tyrese Maxey's shot gets blocked at the backboard as he's trying to go for the layup. And then they make a couple more free throws to end up winning and going up 2-0 in the series over the 76ers, 104-101. But the really big game to me last night was the fact that the Lakers went up by as much as 20 over the Nuggets in the Nuggets' home court, even with those ugly 52-80 jerseys. I don't know why they wear those. I think it's horrible. But they wore it. They were down by as much as 20 against the Lakers. They are able to come back, and it ends up being back and forth over the last couple of minutes. Same thing what we had seen with the Knicks 76ers game. But it was really Jamal Murray who saved the day, because he had a terrible performance early on. He was shooting horrible. In the post-game press conference, he was talking about his BS floater that he went for that just did not go in by any stretch of the imagination. He was taking some questionable shots at points, really struggling, but the team stayed with him. They said, just keep shooting, we believe in you. And he was able to make 14 of his 20 points in the fourth quarter by himself. He made the game-winning shot. He goes past AD, kind of goes under, and you're thinking, okay, maybe he's going to go underneath to get the game-winning layup. No, he sidesteps to the baseline, goes for the fadeaway from the right corner, and he ends up hitting it in front of his own bench, swarms the court. They end up winning at the buzzer 101-99 to take the 2-0 lead over the Lakers. It's looking really good. And that's also our poll question of the day. We'd asked you on Facebook on X, which team down 0-2 in the NBA playoffs is in the most trouble? Is it the 76ers? Is it the Orlando Magic? Or is it the Los Angeles Lakers? You'll be able to vote on Facebook and on X. We're going to go ahead and take a quick timeout, but when we come back, we're going to go with Fletcher Mackle of WDSU to talk about those Pels and those New Orleans Saints as the NFL draft is coming up. You're listening to RP3, D'Lo and Mesh.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
We welcome you back into RP3, D'Lo and Mesh here, a Tuesday edition of the show. It's time to welcome on our first guests of the day because there is a lot going on in the world of New Orleans sports. It's Fletcher Mackel of WDSU. Fletcher, appreciate you making the time for us.
No, thanks for having me. Beautiful day here in New Orleans. I'm actually side of the Saints facility right now waiting for the Mickey Loomis pre-draft media conference.
There you go, and that's part of what I was alluding to there. Not only are the Pelicans in the NBA playoffs, and they'll be hosting a couple of games coming up over the weekend, but the Saints, of course, gearing up for the NFL draft on Thursday, the first round there, second and third on Friday, and finishing things up on Saturday. Let's start with the Saints, Fletcher. We've been playing the game here. Our guy Mesh does all the mock drafts for our station. We've been playing the game of figuring out the most likely candidates to be available still when they pick, and even if we've kind of settled on offensive tackle being the biggest need, you know, it gets dicey where you go, man, what if there's a run on these tackles early on and the Saints aren't as high on the guys that are left? What's your take on where they are right now and what the most likely course of action is for Thursday night?
So I obviously think the most likely course of action is offensive line, probably offensive tackle, since unfortunately Trevor Penning is trending bust. That doesn't mean they're giving up on him, but I don't know if he's a trustworthy starter entering year three. Andres Pete became a free agent, is still a free agent. They haven't re-signed him. Who knows if he'll be back? I don't know if he will, maybe late in the summer. And then unfortunately Ryan Ramczyk, who was a key cog of the team's success from 17 through 20 and one of the best right tackles in the entire NFL, because of the issues he had with his knee, he may never play football again, and maybe not this year, or maybe not until late into the season this year at best. So you certainly look at the offensive tackle position and say, James Hurst has been a nice, fantastic backup at guard and tackle, but he's a backup. So when you say, who's our best tackle and our one solid starter, when it's the guy who's the backup, I'm like, wow, better address the offensive line. That being said, I don't know if the Saints have to do it in the first round. Maybe they do it at pick 45. A lot of the draft nicks that I've spoken with tell me that this is a super deep draft for tackles. So I think there'll still be good ones there at 40. But I think in some form or fashion, addressing the offensive line with one of those first two picks, 14 or 45, I think is one of these certainties you will see. Like if picks 14 and 45 are a wide receiver and a cornerback, I would kind of scratch my head a little bit. I could see wide receiver or cornerback being one of the two picks, but I certainly think offensive line. And it could be an offensive guard that's a plug-and-play guy, and they'll figure out the tackle positions with what they've got because they still believe in Penning. But I certainly think the most obvious glaring area of need on day one and early day two is offensive line.
And, you know, I wanted to ask your opinion on the potential of a player being there that's maybe just too good to pass up in round number one, because everybody's been buzzing about some of the receivers and certainly Brock Bowers at the tight end spot. And I go back to when Sean was here, and we know that Sean had a decent, you know, he factored into the decision, right? It wasn't necessarily like he was making it himself, but he factored in, and there were spots where he said, look, I know we just signed Adrian Peterson, I'm taking Alvin Kamara. And, you know, that was a little bit of a different situation down in the third round. But do you get the idea that this front office, the way they're currently constructed, might fall in love with a player at a position that's not as high of a need, like maybe a Brock Bowers at tight end, and still have that mindset like, you know what, forget the needs, this player's available right now, let's take him?
Look, that they unapologetically do that. So there's a 100% chance that if Brock Bowers is there at 14, they may have said we had him at number 5 on our board. That's what happened with Ryan Ramczyk. I mean, look, I've covered this team now for 22 years, and so I can tell you unapologetically that's how they operate. That's why they took Deuce McAllister. They had Ricky Williams, yet they still drafted Deuce in the first round because Deuce was a potential top 15 pick, and at 23, he shouldn't have been there. 2017, they traded Brandon Cooks, and Sean Payton did a press conference saying, we got to fix our defense. Our offense is hitting on all cylinders, so we needed to trade, you know, a luxury for a necessity. And yet the pick they got, they drafted Ryan Ramczyk, an offensive tackle, when they had Teron Armstead and Zach Streif as their starters, because Ramczyk was across the board a top 20 player in at 33. Been there, and he was a great player for this team, and I hope he's a great player again. So I think 100% if there's a player that they have a high grade on that falls to 14, even if it's something we are not talking about, be it tight end, you know, be it, I don't think they have a running back that high, but if it's a edge rusher, you know, if Dallas Turner is the guy that they are just absolutely in love with, and I think everybody considers him a top 10 guy, if at 14 Dallas Turner from Alabama is there and they say, look, we signed Chase Young, we still believe in Cam, you know, we drafted Peyton Turner, we've got depth on the D-line, but Dallas Turner, even though that may not be our most glaring area of need or a position we think we have to address, if he falls to 14, I can assure you they will take a guy that has been their MO for the 20-plus years that Mickey Loomis has been running the draft.
We're talking with Fletcher Mackel, sports director for WDSU. Fletcher, what odds do you give the Saints that they either trade up from 14 to a higher pick to maybe go get a specific guy, or sit pat at 14 and maybe trade back into the first round like we've seen other teams do in history?
Well, I can tell you, it would be a jaw-dropping, like, mind-blowing moment if they trade back, because the history of Mickey Loomis, who took over as the general manager in fall of 2002, he was the capologist, the assistant general manager, and following the 02 draft, that summer is when he took over and moved up when Randy Mueller and the organization parted ways. Mickey Loomis, since the 2003 draft, that was his first draft as the full-time general manager, has never traded back in the first round. He has only traded up 7 times. So them trading back would be the most mind-blowing thing in Loomis's draft history, because he has told everyone over and over and over again he is an aggressive go-getter, that they see a guy and they go up to get him. Or just what we talked about, a guy fell to them that they cannot pass on. They do not have the philosophy and people can disagree with it. Look, the Patriots made a 20-year career with Brady and Belichick of constantly trading out of the first round to get high-value picks in the second and third round, and built a tremendous roster that way. Other teams function that way, but the Saints don't function that way. And again, we can debate whether that's good or bad, but I think there's a 0% chance they would ever trade back in the first round, even though this is the year you can maybe justify it, because they have a pick at 14, a pick at 45, and then they don't pick again until the fifth round. So, you know, they could use some of those value picks in the second and third round, but I don't think they're going to trade back in the first to do it. Trading up in the first round is always a possibility. I just don't know if they have the ammunition to do it. I don't think they want to or should give up this year's second, and they've already given up a lot of future assets in recent years. So how many more do you continue to give up to move up in round one? You know, look, 2 years ago they gave up a first-round draft pick and a second to get up, and it produced Chris Olave and Trevor Penning. One looks like a hit, one looks like a miss. They probably didn't have to do that. So, again, I don't know if trading up is the way to go, just because I think that this roster is aging and has need, and they need more value picks than to try to trade up and give away future assets. I know I'm long-winded, but if I can point this out, the 2017 draft is one of the greatest in NFL history. It's certainly the greatest in Saints history, and they had 6 picks in the first 3 rounds, and they knocked them all out the park, every single one. Marshon Lattimore, Marcus Williams, Alvin Kamara, Trey Hendrickson, Alex Anzalone. I mean, they literally, all of those guys have become starters and Pro Bowlers. So I feel like they need more picks in rounds 1 through 3, not just 2. But I don't see them giving up 14 or 45. I see them making those picks this year.
And then quickly moving over to the Pelicans, they were able to make it to the playoffs. They have to now face the number one seeded Oklahoma City Thunder. They ended up losing that one 94-92, even though it was a prime opportunity for them to steal one on the road. Do you think that game one was the best chance the Pelicans had of kind of stealing a couple games and having momentum in this series?
It was the only chance they had. That Oklahoma City is young, and Oklahoma City hasn't been there, done that factor. They don't have. But they are awesome. They are really good. Gilgeous Alexander's an MVP finalist. I mean, they are so good with Chet and Jalen Williams. That was the most inefficient game they've played maybe all season. I don't think OKC will be that rusty again. That was New Orleans' chance to steal one. Then maybe they get one here. They force it to six, and then if you've got it to a game seven, anything's possible in a one-game winner-take-all. I think Oklahoma City is probably now going to win it in five. I can still see the Pelicans getting one here, but that was a game that they probably needed to get because Oklahoma City played as poorly as they could have, especially offensively, and the Pelicans did enough to keep themselves in it with Trey Murphy shooting. They needed to hold on to that lead or steal that one to kind of make this a more competitive series, and now I just don't think it will be.
We're wrapping up our conversation with Fletcher Mackel, sports director of WDSU. All right, let's say your scenario is correct, Fletch, and you're usually pretty spot on about these things, and I feel that way too. I think they had their opportunity, and they kind of let it slip through their hands, which they tend to do because they're awful in close games and they don't know how to set offenses in the last minute of a ball game for whatever reason. All that said, what changes do you anticipate happening if they get eliminated, either being swept or get eliminated in five games?
You just asked me a question that I could probably talk for like 30 minutes on. So I would say that there are inefficiencies in this roster, but there are also some strong cornerstones with this roster. One of those cornerstones being Zion Williamson, who played 70 games this year and is an otherworldly type talent. Trey Murphy is a key cog. Herb Jones is a key cog. The biggest issue is going to be Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. Do they continue to double down on that when no metrics show that they make each other better or make their teams better? The last 2 months of the season, Zion was unbelievable. Guys' numbers took a massive hit because Willie Green staggers their minutes. I mean, that tells you all you need to know. They start the games together, they close the games together, but the rest of the way, he plays them where they stagger and don't play together because they don't function as a kind of force multiplier for themselves or their team. So could they figure it out? There was big talk in Boston. Should Boston break up Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? And they didn't, and it ended up working out, and Boston's the best team in basketball. They put the right pieces around those guys. I'm sure you can look, you know, at B.I. and Zion and say, these are our guys. We'll put the right pieces around them. I am probably of the opinion that one of the two needs to go, and it's probably B.I. because Zion is younger, on a long-term contract, and the better player, and you can still get something of worth for Brandon Ingram that fits your organization better and may take you to the next level. Is that going to happen? I don't know, but I am of the opinion that they should probably fix the roster, move one of their two stars, and have a more efficient team around Zion Williamson.
Fletcher, always appreciate your time, man, and your analysis. Keep up the tremendous work. I know it's going to be a busy week for you, bud, with the draft and the Pellies in the playoffs, but keep up the tremendous work, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you all.
We got to take a timeout. More RP3 D-Lo and Mesh coming up right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station on YouTube.
What a start to the show, and I appreciate what Fletcher has to say. And the funny thing, too, it's like I wonder if we get so caught up in the local aspect of it, and we're the same way he is, right? You asked him the question, and we knew what he was going to say. Well, they don't do that. That's the answer why. But I keep going back to what Evan said to us, Evan Cohen, of the morning show here on ESPN Radio nationally, when he said, so the reason is that it's never happened before, and that's the only reason. And my answer is, yeah, that is the only reason. So, like, if they were to do something different this year, if they were to trade down, it does feel like a year where that would make a lot of sense. Now, maybe not at 14, like you say, and I think you like the tackles there, or we imagine the Saints like the tackles there, and you want to get that one right. But that second pick, that extra pick, right, the luxury pick that you have, now you've traded away some of your other picks that wouldn't have been luxury picks, they would have been your own picks. I like the idea of adding one in the third, right, or adding one here late second and a third and replacing it, because I do think it's more of a numbers game. I do want to add more quality players.
I think that's where the second rounder comes in.
Right.
I think, yeah, I think they stay pat at 14 because they're going to get – they're going to have a slew of different options there. Like, they're in a position of power because everyone's going to be fighting with each other to get one of those quarterbacks. Saints aren't going to do that. You're going to have a run on some wide receivers, but you're going to have some pass rushers and some offensive tackles, and we know those are two things that the Saints love. So they're going to sit pat and stand pat, rather, and take the best player available on their board at 14, which they always love to do. The second rounder they have, and that's via Denver for the Sean Payton trade, or rights to you know, the rights to him. That's the one that I could see Dawson them trading back and saying, you know what, let's trade with someone later in the second round and pick up a third. Or even pick up, you know, trade our second round pick and get two thirds and a fourth. Like that's, and they have done that. They when it comes to those picks, and they are notorious for trading their third day picks all the time, right? Either up or down. So that's what I could see them doing is, you know, staying pat right there, standing pat at 14, but taking the second rounder, moving back and picking up a third and maybe a fourth because they're going to need to fill the roster.
You know, the other thing that he said that I actually differed with him on, and maybe I, you know, kind of didn't make this clear. When I said I thought they blew the opportunity for the Pels in game one, I meant to win the series. I still think the Pels win two games in this series. I think they bring it to six games. I'm not as down, and Fletcher said he thinks it's either a sweep or they win one at the most. I'm not that far on it. I just thought they lost their opportunity. I think there's still a chance they get it to game seven, but I don't think they'll have enough in the tank to win it. I do think they win two games in the series, though.
Without Zion?
Yeah, I think so. I think you'll have an opportunity to do that.
Ooh, I like that confidence.
Oh, it's like, you know, it's a yellow light. I still think they would lose the series, and that's what I meant. I thought the game one was their chance to win the series, but I do think they're going to be competitive. I think they're going to respond.
But is it going to be enough? Like, Oklahoma City played one of their worst games of the year, and they still won.
Offensively, yes.
Right. So that's the concern, and this is, I'm not trying to be negative Nancy here. So let me be clear, because I'm in a great mood today.
Yeah.
Is this, how mentally tough is this team to be able to try to come back after letting that game get away from them? Like, that's a legit question without Zion. He's not going to play in game two.
Or game three, or probably.
Probably,
game four,
yeah. He's going to be reevaluated until August. So, are they mentally tough enough to be able to do that? That's my question about them. Not the talent. They got the physical ability, the skill sets that they possess, that B.I. has, that C.J. has, that Jonas has when Willie Green allows him to play, that Trey can do because he is just in his bag all the time now from three-point range. They have the physical ability to do so. Are they mentally tough enough to be able to pull out and try to make this a six-game series? That I don't know, James.
I think with the Pelicans, they definitely are a team that's talented enough and has been together enough to where they can keep themselves in games. Like, I don't think they're going to get blown out by 20 in any of these games that they end up losing. But I think what we've seen from the regular season, and it's a big telltale sign, especially when you also look at the games that they played against the Thunder. You would have to be ahead by 10 to 15 throughout the game for you to feel comfortable that they're going to end up winning. Because in any of the close games that we've seen, and we've seen Rod Walker bring it up, and we've seen other people on Twitter bring it up as well, and we've even seen it for ourselves. Any time where it's a close game, late in the ball game, whether the Pelicans are coming back or they're up by, say, 6 with 3 minutes to go, they struggle to score the basketball. And the defense falls apart late. They give up a few baskets. Now they're down by 4-6 themselves with about 30 seconds to go. Maybe they make a basket, but then they give up another free throw or give up another basket late, and then they just end up losing. And that's just a common theme that we've seen throughout the season.
Yeah, no, and I get it. I do think I think the other aspect here is the Thunder are going through this stuff too. I wonder if the Thunder exerted a lot of energy defensively in game one and if that wears on you. Now, again, both teams have the extra day off here, so maybe that ends up helping the Thunder. Both teams were playing physical, but
yeah, and they both struggled early on. So, yeah, we'll see there. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see. Look, do I think the Pels could push it to 5? Yeah. But man, if they come out tomorrow and they're lifeless early, and they lose that game, and we know how they play at home, not It's suboptimal.
Barely 500 ball.
Playing the Smoothie King Center, so we'll see. We got to take a timeout. When we return, we'll give you an update on our poll question of the day, and we'll get to some breaking news courtesy of Adam Schefter. People have been asking me about the tampering allegations. We'll share what Schefty had to say about that in regards to this week's draft. That's all coming up next right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Because you asked for it, I got you. Lots of chatter, rumors. We talked about this on yesterday's show, and Dawson rightfully so said, yeah, a lot of people are talking about the tampering situation that could cost picks for both the Philadelphia Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons. And the Falcons' case is the charges of tampering with Kirk Cousins before free agency began, and they were able to go poach him away from Minnesota. So lots of rumblings, but some of it from unreliable sources, if you will. Well, Adam Schefter tweeted out about this. The league's review into tampering allegations against the Falcons and Eagles is ongoing. So there is technically an investigation into Philadelphia and Minnesota for tampering. But Schefter also says it's ongoing and will not conclude this week per the NFL, which means it will not directly impact this year's draft. So the Falcons won't have to give up any picks, including their top 10 pick this year. Sorry, Saints fan. I know you're hoping for some great news there about the Dirty Birds having to forego some picks because they tampered to get Kirk Cousins. But it's not happening. So sorry, you're not going to like that.
I would have liked if they had their top 10 pick taken away, personally.
That would have been you would have appreciated that.
That would have been fun.
James Mesh, we never tamper with your greatness because, well, why would we? That would make us stupid. How are we doing with our poll question of the day, sir?
48% of the votes are going with the Lakers as the team down 0-2 that is in the most trouble. Then it's a split at 26% apiece for the 76ers and the Magic. We did get a couple of comments. Ton had said, I'm saying 76ers. They were picked to sweep, weren't they? JBK also said the Lakers were in trouble when it was 0-0. The king is old. Darren had said, if the Sixers blow this with Embiid, he may want out. And then John Paul had said, I just like to say the Lakers are in trouble just being from California and Los Angeles, and they're in trouble trying to get home.
Yeah, well, that's funny. But Embiid is hurt, you know, and so he's playing
about 70-80%.
They still, look, they should have won the game. There was a kind of a broadcasting snafu. I subscribe to those types of things where the broadcast team said postgame was going to be fun. They did their job, stole one on the road, and they were talking about getting back to Philly, and it was a 5-point game with 50 seconds left, and they ended up losing. So that wasn't a great look
credit
for the home TV broadcast. But
I think the team most, like, I think they're all in trouble.
Yeah.
If we're being honest here, I think we all thought that, who thought that the 76ers were going to sweep the Knicks?
Well, I think Philly's in the least trouble. I really do, of the three. I think New York's had to get a couple real fortuitous bounces to win both games. You go back to Philly here, and Embiid ideally is getting a little healthier. Maybe he's not, but if he is, I think Philly's okay in this series. I think Orlando is in some trouble, and I think L.A. is certainly in some trouble. L.A. reminds me kind of the Pels thing. Like, you had your shot. You knew you had to steal one or two, and now you fail to, and then you have to play that much better and then still try and win four out of the next five. I think L.A.'s ship is sailing here. And also, Jokic, he's got so much motivation. He doesn't want to play basketball at all, so when it's like I can win a series in four games and then I have to play three less games and I can go tend to my horses, that's an advantage for him.
The man that wisely dressed up like Gru the other day was
he is
amazing.
Incredible, man.
He is incredible. I think the Lakers are done. I think the 76ers, I think they're in just as much trouble as well. Losing a game like that, yeah, you get to go back home, but Joel is not 100%, and this is a team that isn't great to begin with. And I think the Knicks are a better team and a better roster. So I like New York to win that series. Max six games there. I think I wouldn't be surprised if they get it done in five. Hour one in the books. Hour number two, it's going to be even better. I know that's hard to believe, but it's going to be. Stay tuned.
This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Hour number two of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh has arrived here on a Tuesday edition of the show. We had Fletcher Mackel in hour number one. We'll have two guests for you coming up, one of them in about 15 minutes, the other coming in about a half hour. First, it'll be Corey Sainawa talking about a project that he's been working on for a long time. We talked to him way back, I believe, in the old days of RP3 and company about this project, Cajun's mascot. They've been a void there for a while. He's come up with an idea, and it's gotten more and more traction. In some areas, maybe not in all areas, but we're going to get an update on him and kind of how that process has been going with his, you know, really, really creative guy, and he's got a lot of good ideas, and a proud UL alum at that. And then we'll have Jeff Palermo. We'll talk about LSU baseball. How much do they need to accomplish in the next couple of weeks if they want to play baseball in the postseason? This feels like a really big one, and we'll hear from Jeff his thoughts on that, and maybe his thoughts as well on Beth Tarina becoming the winningest coach in softball history. And hey, LSU Gymnastics also took home a national title as well. So it's been a busy weekend in the news circuit there for Tigers athletics. But all things considered, we also talk a lot about the Pels and the Saints there. The NFL draft, of course, just a couple days away. It's here. Doesn't feel like it's here, but it's here.
It is here, and we heard Fletcher Mackel, our friend from WDSU, talk about that Mickey Loomis was having his traditional pre-draft press conference today. Well, Ed Daniels from WGN, O.
There you go. Got to throw the O in there.
I forgot. I had to take a breath. Saints GM Loomis says, still envisioning Trevor Penning as a tackle. So all those people, raise your hand. That would be me. That would be I, that envision him better at the guard position. Mickey Loomis is telling you, nah, bruh. Uh-uh.
You ain't doing that stuff, ball.
Now, we'll react to more. We'll have clips of Mickey, and we'll share those on Thursday's show. And we'll have that ready for you because we got a special show for you tomorrow. Now, I brought this up before that, oh, they're taking a tackle. They're taking a tackle. They're taking a tackle. What if the new coaching staff, the new position groups, new O-line coach, new offensive coordinator, they've looked at the tape and they say, this guy can play. Y'all just didn't use him right. This guy can be our left tackle. What if the front office and the coaching staff says, Trevor is our starting left tackle, and we believe Ramczyk is healthy enough to come back and be the starting right tackle? Are the Saints going to draft a tackle at 14, or would they take the best player on the board?
And I'll further that point, right? Even let's say that is the case. And obviously, look, we're getting down to some questions we don't have answers for, but speculation is fun, right? It's what we do in this business. If that is the case, some people, the answer might be, well, we'd have heard some buzz by now. I think the option would be, if you did feel that way about Penning, you don't want to put all the pressure on him right now. There is no point in coming out and saying, guys, we've been looking at it. We think Penning's got a great future. He's going to be the guy week one. We're going to throw him out. No, there's no reason to put that pressure on him right now. Internally in that building, those meetings, which is why, by the way, everyone who hates on Hard Knocks, I would love to get that look behind the scenes, right, about this team specifically, because Dennis Allen is kind of, you know, has no personality in press conferences. But that might be their set, you know, behind closed doors, they might be saying, look, yeah, this Penning kid, like, we see the tools mentally. He probably got a little discouraged last year, but we think we put him in our system. We get him all in the run game. We're going to get him rolling. There's no reason to say that right now. So I do hope you're right. And we may find the answer to that out at, you know, I don't know, 8:15 Central Standard Time on Thursday night when they make their selection, right? I mean,
Let me throw something else at you here. This was brought up to me this morning. Carr's going to get sacked no matter what. What if you just try to make it as easy for him as possible to get the ball out as quickly as possible by giving him as many weapons as possible?
Well, now we're going to the old. Y'all remember the meme there when Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow were being selected, where it was like, you know, having anybody up on the offensive line and then the line drawn to the receiver, and it was like anyone could be down there.
And they made it to the Super Bowl with a terrible offensive line.
Right, I was going
to
say, yeah. they kind of went against that grain, and it worked out for them. Now, they invested heavily into the O-line afterwards, and look, they've still had some issues
and
here
and
there.
It hasn't really worked, but yeah.
They've tried, right? And part of that was, you know, Joe's injury was pretty fluky last offseason, so, you know, that's a little bit separate. But either way.
If Brock Bowers or one of those stud wide receivers, I'm talking like for whatever reason,
Roma Dunze or Malik
Nabers or one of those guys drops and they're sitting there at 14.
You just have to take them.
Well, and the thing about that is we've seen this in years past with the Saints. And look, if you want to jump in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Mike's Marine Hotline is open, 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. We've seen, like, linebackers before fall to the Saints, and the Saints say, no, thank you, we're going in another direction. Most famously, Patrick Queen from LSU, right? And he ends up going to Baltimore, and he's turned out to be a very good pro. That's a position that they don't like drafting. That's a position that they always try to address in free agency. Think about the last 15-plus years. Scott Shanley, Fujita, those are guys that they got in free agency or via trade. Vilma, same way.
DeMario,
same way. Like they don't
Werner's the draft pick there that stands out.
So,
but there's also been mixed results with him in the last
But when it comes to offensive skill position guys, what did I tell you? They love drafting in the history of since Mickey Loomis has been in charge. They love drafting, words are hard. O-line, D-line, DB, and wide receiver. Those are the four position groups they love drafting in the first two rounds of the draft for almost 20 years, guys.
And depending on the player, they might go get a running back as well.
Correct. Running back would be five on that list. Your honorable mention of who would make it in the top four. So if one of those guys, because you're going to have teams fighting over quarterbacks, and you're going to have players that are just going to be right there sitting at 14. And there's going to be a run-on position group. Someone may get crazy and go, I need one of these cornerbacks, and then everyone freaks out because it happens every single year, right? We see guys overdrafted every single year because a team will take a position and everyone starts freaking out. Well, I got to go get my corner now because he's not going to be there in four more picks. It happens every year.
There's always guys that end up going a lot higher than people anticipate, which also results in other players where you're like, well, this guy was a top 15 guy. How did he go 30?
And
or go to the second round.
Correct. Oh, man, it's going to be hard for Mickey and Jeff Ireland and those boys to sit there. If they think Trevor Penning's the starting left tackle, is taking a tackle in the first round really a priority? Honestly.
How about some live reaction here? Mickey Loomis is in his presser, and our guy Sean Fazano over at Fox 8 is kind of
live shout out
tweeting.
To our guy. We need to talk to him again. It's
we should. We'll catch up with Sean soon. Sean says that Loomis said, it's a great year for offensive players. Everyone would say good year for O-line and wide receiver when talking about the draft.
Oh, there it is.
He joked on his trade-up, trade-down philosophy, said they're willing to do both, but they're 15-0 trading up.
That's amazing.
He also said, you know, getting players in that third, fourth round gap really depends on the players who are available. So that's some early comments there from Mickey Loomis, kind of paraphrased by our guy, Sean. But we'll see what else comes out of that presser, which is happening as we speak right now. For now, we will go to the Mike's Marine Hotline where we got our guy, Ralph, who wants to talk about the black and gold. Ralph, where is your mind here as we're just a couple days away from the draft?
Well, regardless of what Loomis said today, and even if they do think Penning can play left tackle, I still think you take the best offensive tackle available at 14. And the reason being, number one, a couple of these guys are projected to start off their NFL careers at guard and then slide to tackle. You need to upgrade your guard position also because James Hurst and, I mean, you know, Ruiz took a little bit of a step forward 2 years ago, but last year didn't really, you know, build on that. And I don't know what's the deal on Andres Pete. I mean, he didn't get any really bites in free agency.
Yeah, not yet.
But But, I mean, he's up there. He's getting up there in, you know, in age, too, you know. And I just think you need to I think number one, I really believe whatever offensive tackle is left at 14 is going to be the best player available, in my opinion. And I think, you know, you might see him, you know, if one of these receivers that they kind of really like is at there later in round one, you could see them take their second round pick, package it with a, you know, maybe a whatever future pick or a couple of fifth rounders or whatever and move back in. But I still think that offensive line needs to be upgraded. And I get the point about Carr, you know, and but I just.
I okay, well, Ralph, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. They're not taking a guard at that high. So they're going to take the tackles are you're speaking of. You're talking about the kid from Notre Dame, Washington, Oregon State, and then
Alabama.
Yeah. Right? So we got four guys.
Now, let me ask y'all this because I didn't get to listen to the Mackle thing, okay? But in their mock draft that they had online, he picked the offensive tackle from Duke as that the Saints would pick as their first round pick. Did he mention anything about that?
No, he didn't. But I want to ask you a question.
Okay. All right.
What if those four tackles are gone?
I cannot envision a scenario with that.
No, but I'm asking. What if and we think
then
the Saints no what I'm saying
they won't do this, but I look at trading down. They get more picks.
But they're not going to do that. You know Mickey doesn't trade down like that. So I guess my question to you is, we think there's four guys that they should take, right? I actually agree with you. I think the smart move because of Ramchek's health. Let's say I buy into Trevor Penning being a starter, okay? Let's say I buy into that.
He's not.
Let's say I buy into it. Ramchek is on his last leg, literally, right? And maybe if you're Mickey, you decide that you want to bring back Andres Pete because no one else wants him, right? You can bring him on a team-friendly deal to give you some depth. Okay, great. That's fine. You put Pete and Penning, let them battle it out at left. But you still need someone else, right? Because Ramchek's not going to last that long. I actually agree with you. But we don't know if the Saints are as high on those four tackle prospects as we are. Like, that's the thing, right? So it happens every year. We go, well, that guy, that's a slam dunk. They should take him right there. Why aren't they taking him? And we don't know what the Saints draft board looks like. And so that's my thing. I just want you to keep your mind open on this because, yeah, those four tackles could be there, or two of the four could be there, but there's no guarantee that the Saints may even have those guys on their personal board, right? So that's the interesting is what's going to happen there.
I always prepare myself to be disappointed on draft night.
But don't
right?
be surprised I'm if they take a wide receiver, I mean, man. You know this, dude. You know this. Tell me you would not be stunned that if 14 comes around and the Saints select a wide receiver. You wouldn't be stunned by that.
I'm never stunned by what they do. I can remember many times having to try to go to Mike Dettillier's draft guide and find the guy they just picked. I'm like, I never heard of him, you know? Look, you know, who knows?
It should be tackle. It should be. I agree with you. It should be tackle, and then maybe you can get one of those other really good wide receivers in round two, maybe like a Keon Coleman from Opelousas Catholic in Florida State, right? Just as a recommendation. We'll see. Like, we've been so focused and locked in on them taking a tackle for, what, 3 months? It worries me now. Everyone's been saying tackle.
Turning into Kevin Foote right now, right in front of my
fair point.
It's a fair point, Ralph. It's a fair point. Appreciate the phone call, brother. Thank you, bud.
Look, hey, one more thing. Make sure Mesh is not vaping too much because that could be why his hair ain't right. It ain't right.
Oh. Brain ain't running right. That's true. Oh. Appreciate it, Ralph. Right. There you go.
Thank you, Ralph.
We got to take a time out. That's a great reference, by the way.
That is an amazing
If you don't understand
reference.
It, just listen a little closer in some of the commercials.
Oh,
we'll get
man. We've had a great show, man.
And we're going to make it even better because we're going to talk with Corey Sainawa on the other side. Stay with us.
Go sign up for our Rewards Club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
We welcome you back into RP3 D'Lo and Mesh here, a Tuesday edition of the show. You heard us talk about it earlier, and this is a guest that we had on a while back in the old days of RP3 and Company, to talk about a fun project that he had been working on and now has continued to work on and gained a lot more traction on it. It's Corey Sainawa, who has created a UL mascot concept that has really captured the attention of a lot of Cajuns fans. Corey, how have you been, my man?
I've been really good. Really, really good. So happy to be back with you guys talking about this project I love so much.
So, for those who don't remember, just, kind of give us the basics of where you came up with this idea of albino and where the first ideas of it came to be, and then how you kind of, put those onto paper and made them kind of a reality.
It starts with just seeing a need in our community. I'm a 2017 alum of UL. And I kept going to the games and just saw dwindling fan support from young folks. It just became, it just became apparent that there was just a void. There's a void in engagement and a community level. And mascots are implemented everywhere, from professional sports teams, high school teams, and especially in college. It's not just like a fun little character. It's a big part of the university's iconography, and I just saw an opportunity that our university, our fan base, our athletics was missing out on. So, I just looked around of what would be the easiest and obvious choice to create a mascot that would last longer than the previous iterations, whether it's Cayenne, the Bulldog, Mr. Cajun Man, and I landed on an alligator. And then I was, what if it was an albino alligator? Because all of those are exclusively have been found in Louisiana, and our colors are vermilion and white. It would be such an easy implementation. You wouldn't have to incorporate any of that yellow or orange flames in order to make the character work. It's just vermilion and white, and it'd be an easier transition for our community to embrace a new spirit leader.
And so I remember when you came out with it, and obviously some people latched on it right away, and then some others were more hesitant, and it started to evolve, and you had the mock-ups, and I remember you explaining a little bit about the process of how kind of putting it to life came to be. But then you really expanded on that since we last talked, and I mean there's been some people have been coming up with shirts, and they've been putting the logo, and you've been kind of evolving that as well into different scenarios. What's been kind of the inspiration behind that, and how have you been able to pull that off?
Well, yeah. I just kept working hard. The kind of innovations AI has allowed for me to just put in concepts, take those concepts and then edit them myself as an artist. So I was able to produce more content and just flesh out a really nice presentation to present to the wider fan base. I think a big thing is that, Southwest Louisiana, they are, they connect with people. That the first presentation when I talked to you guys, a lot of them just had a hard time connecting with the image, but when they see the passion behind it, I've allowed myself to be more vocal. People know who I am, and they hardworking people appreciate other hardworking people, especially when it comes to being a fan. So, as I put out more concepts and content out there, people are starting to see the same potential that I'm seeing, and it's been beautiful to see them embrace it, from students to small businesses, certain, big, alumni. And, it's all over the internet now. It's been on Reddit, Google, Facebook, different news outlets. It's really been an exciting time to get people thinking about what could be possible with our spirit leader.
And that's another thing I've been really impressed with, the way, the whole concept has come about, because I saw some of the criticisms of it, or maybe some of the people who didn't buy into the idea, but you did a nice job, I felt like, explaining sometimes, like, look, this doesn't have to be the final product. We can work on this, and it's more of just the idea that there needs to be something in place. And I would agree with you there. I think there is a void. And so how did you come up with the idea of kind of saying, you know, look, this is the first idea, but it's not finished yet?
Yeah, well, my biggest criticism when it came to any of the previous iterations of Mascot was the lack of fan input in their implementation. I think that was just a big detriment and the reason why they're not here today. A lot of Albino's concept, yes, most of Albino came from me, but with the second iteration, I read every comment, whether it was positive or negative, and there was a lot of positive. People believe that it's universally hated. That's completely false. More people like it than dislike it. But the people that did dislike it, I read those comments. I took, as an artist, as a professional artist, I can take criticism, and I want the product to thrive and be reflective of the community. So there, I developed the lore and also know what is movable in the concept and what is not, and what would be best for our community. But I think taking fan input is definitely important, and you're seeing just without as its continued popularity has grown, that works. People connect with other people that work hard and care to listen to them, and that's what makes the character stronger.
Corey, Raymond here. One of the things I find interesting about this process that you're going through is you mentioned it already, the AI and how you can actually, it goes from being a drawing or a painting, it goes to something that looks like it's on the sidelines, right? And I think that's really kind of won over folks in a lot of ways. My question to you, though, is do you think there's more trepidation, if you will, to embracing going forward with a mascot because they haven't had one in so long? We used to joke all the time that the overly muscle Cayenne, it was buried somewhere in an unmarked grave because they just got rid of them and then it was gone. Do you think that has made it easier, or do you think that's made it more difficult, the fact that you're not trying to replace a mascot, you're trying to create one from scratch when there hasn't been a mascot for years?
Well, I think it's made it easier. Like, if Cayenne was still around, I wouldn't be doing any of this. We wouldn't be having this conversation. But our community, our fan base, has shown that mascots matter. I've seen so many comments of, like, oh, the university can't get it right. Like, USL, ULL, UL, they're always changing their identity. It's not really, it's the identity's changing not because of indecision. It's because our community, our university has kept growing and progressing and defining that identity. It took 10 years for Raging Cajuns to become officially adopted, to go from, half a century, more than half a century, of being the Bulldogs to Raging Cajuns, which perfectly reflects the area, and now that's inseparable from the identity. To go from, another half century of being USL to, attempting to be the University of Louisiana officially on the books and having to settle with, ULF yet, but still our university has just progressed. It's one of the most progressing universities in the state. And our mascot has had to follow suit. Bulldogs, Mr. Cajun Man, the fabulous Cajun Chicken, Cayenne, to what's after that. And I think we have an opportunity to create something that can stick. So if Cayenne was the guy, then he would be the guy, and he would still be here. But like you said, buried in an unmarked grave, because identity matters, representation matters, and I think there's something on the horizon that would be better suited for the sidelines of the University of Louisiana.
And Corey, I would like to add this as well. As a father of a 9-year-old daughter, when it's often a struggle to get her to pay attention or get her to be excited to come to a sporting event, and even though I'm not a UL grad, we tend to go to games all the time because they're the local team. And I took her the night that the Fabulous Cajun Chicken came back after being gone for decades, and she was over the moon excited. And you know what? I saw dozens, if not hundreds, of kids just be overjoyed by the fact of someone in a chicken costume out there doing dance routines during a basketball game. And I think that's what gets missed on this, is that if having a mascot on the sidelines for football or there during basketball games or baseball, softball games, if that helps get families to come because their kids want to come, it seems like to me that's a slam dunk, right? Like it should be just that easy.
It should. And when coming up with concepts for albino, or like why I settled with albino, families and kids were part of it. You know, that was one of the big critiques of cayenne, right? That cayenne is such a high concept, an anamorphic pepper. If you're 4, 5, 6 year old, he doesn't look like a pepper. He was a walking red demon man with flames. We're surrounded by alligators, we're surrounded by alligators. It's a lot more tangible for a child to hold on to something that is already so prevalent in different imagery, especially being from Louisiana. So there's just so many opportunities to educate them, to get them to have fun when it comes to our culture. Albino can have a washboard on, and they can give, he can give them a tiny washboard and they could play a little Zydeco music. You're thinking exactly the stuff that I wanted to touch on, which is, it's about youth. Mascots entertain kids, and I'm really glad you're also thinking about that as well, too, because it is a missed opportunity that I think needs to be amended. Get more families there, have kids make memories that will last them a lifetime, Get them excited to be a raging Cajun.
And we got one more for you, Corey. I wanted to ask you, where do you stand with the university and them embracing the mascot?
So what I've told people is that albino is in unofficial mascot territory. And what does that mean is that I've thrown it out there, anyone can use an image of albino without my permission. It belongs to the fan base. If you do some research, like go through the history of some of the most prominent mascots, or when I say mascot, I'm not talking about the nickname Raging Cajuns. I'm talking about spirit leaders, physical suits, that contributed to the imagery. They existed for many years as unofficial, meaning students dressed up as the character. They just went to games and, went around, and eventually, the university adopted them because it won the fans first. Take, for example, Brutus of Ohio State, one of the most iconic spirit leaders there is. That was a student invention, and the students just did it. And it was like that for years. So the university was like, this is going to be our thing. So that's kind of where we are now. There's too much at stake for the university to just flat out adopt my idea. So that's where I and the rest of the albino supporters have to come together and do the hard work and get the rest of our community to embrace them as the unofficial mascot as well. And you can go around Raging Cajun's Twitter and see around that people already have or are putting in that work. And in a few years, we'll see what our conversations are looking like, and we're just trying to make that the easiest yes the university can have.
Well, Corey, I really appreciate your time. I've enjoyed keeping along with it. I love the stuff you put out, and I hope it keeps getting more traction, man. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Hey, I appreciate y'all's time. Okay, y'all have a great one.
There he is, Corey Sainawa, the creator of the albino mascot campaign for UL Athletics. We got to take a time out here. Jeff Palermo on the other side, talk about LSU, see what he thinks about this baseball team right now, as well as some other happenings in the world of Tigers athletics.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, and your home for the LSU Tigers.
Oh, and speaking of those LSU Tigers, it's time to bring on our third and final guest for today's Tuesday edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. He's the co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. He's also the news and sports director of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also a proud Chicago Cub fan. They're pretty good this year. Our buddy Jeff Plermo joins us now. Jeff, good day, sir. How are you?
Doing well, Raymond. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, bud. So let's start off with the baseball team. They had to work at it,
a
little bit, but they finally get off the schneid. They win their first conference series of the year by taking 2-3 from Mizzou up in Columbia. Does how they played and the fact that they were able to get 2 out of 3 change your perception of this team somehow finding a way to get to an NCAA regional?
Well, I think they finally found something with their weekend rotation. I think wouldn't be surprised if this is kind of what they go with the rest of the way, with Gage Jump pitching on Friday, Luke Holman, your game two starter, and then Nate Ackenhausen has pitched really well as your Sunday starter, and then deploying Griffin Herring, who's been just absolutely dominant out of the bullpen whenever you need him, and whenever you need to go get, you know, 3-4 innings. That seems like it works. Now, you know, who they use beyond those guys, I mean, they're obviously they've been putting in Aiden Moffitt in there a little bit more, Cam Johnson. I know they would love to somehow try to get Thatcher Hurd right again and get him out there, and I think there's still faith in guys like Gavin Kittrey. So there's a group of guys that I think Jay feels pretty comfortable with. So it seems like at least, especially on that Sunday starter, Ackenhausen is giving them a chance to win. And in that three-game stretch there, or that three-weekend series stretch where when they were playing Florida and when they were playing Mississippi State, and you know they just didn't even have a chance to win that final game of the series, and that wasn't very good at all, where you're getting run ruled and not having a chance to win when you're playing Vanderbilt and so forth. But they were there in that game against Tennessee on Sunday a couple of weeks ago, and then obviously got enough clutch hitting to beat Missouri this past Sunday. And then I guess the other development here is the freshman from Kansas getting the type of at-bats that they're getting from Ashton Larson. They needed somebody just to kind of step up, a guy that wasn't necessarily on the radar after some of these other guys have just kind of fallen off a little bit. And Larson has been that guy, a three-hit performance on Friday against Missouri. He now has a 7-game hitting streak, a lot of multi-game, you know, he's not only getting hits, but there's multi-hit or multi-hit games in there as well. He leads the team in hitting in SEC play. So somebody has stepped up. Now, they still need a lot more to go right for them. They still need more arms to come get more consistent. It still would help if you had 2 or 3 other hitters get hot. But I think as far as making a run in the second half of this SEC season, what they did against Missouri was certainly a nice start.
Now, they get Auburn to come to town, and they are dreadful. They're under 500 overall. They're 2-6 team in the SEC. They're the worst team by far in the conference. So you get them at the box this coming weekend. But let's look ahead a little bit. Let's assume, and I know our parents taught us not to, but let's assume that they win the series against Auburn. Let's say they don't sweep. Let's just say they take 2 or 3. They have A&M, who looks absolutely unreal. They still have an Alabama team that looks pretty good. And then they have an Ole Miss team that's on the struggle bus. What's your confidence level? Or I guess my question to you, Jeff, is this, rather. How many of the remaining series do they need to win, in your opinion, to become an NCAA regional team?
I really think they need a sweep this weekend against Auburn, and I know that's hard to say because they just finally won an SEC series, but especially with the Texas A&M series looming and playing the number one ranked team in the country. Now, granted, that game will be at Alec Box Stadium, Skip Hartman's field, or that series will be, so that helps out a little bit. But and then they got to go back on the road and play Alabama, who you mentioned is having a decent season. So it just feels like this weekend against Auburn, you almost feel like you need to sweep, get you back to 8-13 then, and then you – I really felt going into this stretch against Missouri and Auburn, winning 5 out of 6 would really, really help. And I still really feel that way. Now, you know, they can win each series, you know, win 2 out of 3 in these remaining series, and that probably, yeah, let's see, that gets them to 13 wins, and that's kind of the – right? Am I right on that? Yeah, that gets them to the magic number of where I think they really need to get to in order to get into the conference tournament. Now, there have been teams that – or get into the NCAA tournament. Now, there have been teams that have qualified with 12 wins, and that might be enough as well, but I wouldn't – I think at least winning all these series is what they have to do, and that includes Texas A&M. But what would really help to me is, you know, pounce on a team like Auburn that's really struggling, try to get that sweep. To me, it's still going to be very razor thin. I think Memorial Day is going to come around the day of the NCAA tournament brackets coming out, and it's, unless LSU goes on a huge run here and say they only lose a couple more conference games the rest of the way and they somehow finish 15-15 on the season. You know, outside of that, or maybe even if they get to 14 wins, if they're anywhere around 13 or 12 wins in league play, to me, it's really on the bubble. And you got to get in the conference tournament to begin with, because right now they're not even in that. They still got to leapfrog Missouri for that to occur. So there's still plenty of work to be done here.
We're speaking with Jeff Palermo of Tiger Ag Radio. Jeff, I did want to ask you, we know it goes under the radar a little bit. Beth Tarina's team, which had such an incredible start to the year, they've, you know, somewhat struggled in SEC play, but hey, it's a really strong conference. She broke the mark set by Yvette Girard for becoming the winningest coach in program history. Just what do you make of the job she's done and this team specifically that's, you know, really overachieved in a lot of areas, at least heading into where we thought they'd be coming into the season?
Well, they're a veteran team, and that's what really helps out with this group. Sierra Briggs, Allie Newland, Raylene Gutierrez, Carly Petty, Taylor Pleasance. I mean, all those players have been around, and I think Beth Tarina leans on that quite a bit. Sydney Berzon has been really good in the circle. Kelly Lynch has really come on strong here lately in the circle. The last two outings she's had have been absolutely fantastic, shutting out Tennessee, and she had a no-hitter against Auburn. They played a really good Tennessee team this past weekend. They only scored one run, but yet LSU figured out a win, at least to salvage a game in the series, which I thought was important. And this conference, when it comes to softball, the SEC, it just can really chew you up. I mean, this is a really good, in my mind, a really good LSU softball team. But you look at the record and you say, well, they're, you know, they're only 11-10 in the Southeastern Conference, but man, this league is really, really tough. And I think LSU certainly experienced that this past weekend. And then if you kind of let your guard down a little bit, you end up losing series that you probably shouldn't. You know, the Ole Miss series, the Auburn series, those were a couple series that they probably wish they got back and had victories. But this team is. I still think that, you know, they're in a really good spot to potentially be a top 8 national seed. Need to finish off strong. Need to get a win tonight. This would be another good RPI win. Go on the road, beat a team like UL, then take care of Arkansas and Liberty in the final couple weeks of the regular season, and they should be feeling pretty good about being a top 8 national seed. But she's done a terrific job with this group, and again, I think a lot of it is because she's got some veterans there that have been around quite a while, and you know, that's I think really, especially they've had a lot of games where they've come back and won, and they were down late in games or games where they kind of broke through finally in the 5th, 6th, or 7th inning, and I think a lot of that is just because of the experience on the team that they just keep grinding and they're battling, and eventually they break through, and they've been able to get a lot of their wins that way this season.
And you mentioned it should be a fun one over at Lampson Park tonight, Cajuns and Tigers round number two. Jeff, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for catching up with us, and we'll talk to you again here soon.
All right, guys. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
There he is, Jeff Palermo of Tiger Rag Radio. We got to take our final time out of the day. We hadn't even mentioned it, really. It's been such a busy day. Cajuns and Tigers are going to be playing in softball. We'll talk a little bit about that and also get you an update to the poll question of the day on the other side.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Wrapping up this Tuesday edition of RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. Before we get to the poll question of the day, did want to announce some news for Haley Van Lith. She initially, the news came out that she was transferring to TCU. Well, that's not exactly correct, because she had said, I did take a visit to TCU, and I'm very interested in them, but I took other visits to other school and was very interested in them as well, so I haven't made anything official. So that's one thing to note, as well as looking at the poll question of the day. We had asked you on Facebook and on X, which team down 0-2 in the NBA playoffs is in the most trouble? Half of you have said those Los Angeles Lakers, 27% have said the Magic, and the final 23% have said the 76ers.
Keep those votes coming. Leave your comments on Facebook and X, and James Mesh will update it throughout the Jordy Holberg show that's coming up.
He will. Well, he should, right?
Yeah, he should. He should.
I'll think about it,
too. Peter Schrager, who covers the NFL, talks about the NFL on the radio and the television. Yes. Was on the Pat McAfee show earlier today, and he says he's been on the phone for the better part of the last 48 hours. He expects to have multiple teams trade up and trade back in the first round, and he anticipates having six quarterbacks taken in the first round. So that would be Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix. Those are your six, and he's hearing that they could be taken in the top half of the first round.
Woo! Which means Brock Bowers, welcome to New Orleans.
Which means usually one of those guys will fall down and go to be a second-round guy, right? We saw it with Mayonnaise and the Coffee Guy in Tennessee.
Yeah, Will Levis.
Will Levis. Remember Malik was supposed to be a first-round guy from Liberty, and he fell all the way to the third?
Yeah, yes. And that seemed like it might have been too early as well.
Yeah, Tennessee's not great at the drafting of the quarterbacks lately.
They're having some struggles there. I did want to mention just the Cajuns and Tigers tonight, softball. It's big for UL. It's big for both, because we talked about LSU's trying to keep that top eight national seed contention. UL's trying to get back into hosting spot, which they're in a pretty good spot for. And I'll be honest, if UL wins this game tonight, they have a really good hosting resume to submit, to sign, seal, and deliver to the committee at the end of the year. So this is one that they want badly. We'll see. Seems like Glasgow's going to go with Sam Landry. We saw Sydney Berzon toss for LSU in game one, and she was really good after the first inning. So maybe they go back to her, but I would expect maybe they'll go with Kelly Lynch tonight. We'll see. I thought Glasgow, he mentioned after the game, he really thought they were going to throw Kelly Lynch the first time. Should be a good one, and Matt Miguez will have some coverage for you there between two of the local teams that we cover over at Lampson Park tonight. What a great show, huh?
Oh, great show. Make sure to watch out at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com for a story. He'll also be on the socials.
For sure.
For that marquee matchup between two top 25 ranked opponents. So that's going to be a good one. Good one over at Lampson Park. Definitely needed for the Cajuns if they want to try to be a host.
Yep.
Remember, they had all those opportunities to get those marquee wins early in the season. They weren't able to get it until they beat Oklahoma the one time. Splitting with LSU would be huge for them to maintain that position of probably trying to host an NCAA regional. Right now, the latest projections I saw last night has LSU hosting with UL being the 2 seed and McNeese being the 3.
Of course. So, they love doing that.
They love doing that.
Fletcher Mackle, he brought it. Hour number one. We had Corey Sainawa. Great conversation. Love hearing his thoughts and kind of the way his brain works with some of the concepts there with the UL mascot that we talked about. And then Jeff Palermo. Always.
Yeah, it was good. We'll be back on tomorrow, 11-1, but it's going to be a special show. You'll find out about that in the morning.
Absolutely.
But until then, be safe out there. Be kind to one another. The Jordy Holtberg Show with the Blonde Bomber. Jordy Holtberg. Next, right here on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.